4 CPA Mobile. KO4LAO. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm just marvelous. How about yourself?
Just over by the Greenville Science, the Spartanburg Science Center, just north of that in Barnett Park, doing a little fly-in demonstration for kids with a drone.
Oh, man. Well, that's neat. I'm supposed to be going, if everything works out, I'll be going up to Steve's KN4BWA. And I think Dave's going to be up there, W4DJW, and they're going to build a plane if everything works out.
To Steve Friday, I talked to both Steve and Dave Friday as well. They're, I guess that's the flying center there off where Highway 14 and 11 meet.
Sure, exactly where the field is. I've been there. I couldn't get back there if I had to. I think Steve's house or went by his driveway and he gave me directions from there over the phone. So I really don't remember exactly where it is. It's a field up there near his house.
That's the one, and I happened to be going, where was I? I was on 11, going across 14 there when I was talking to him, and he said, hey, the field's pretty close to there. But I fly over with the Foothills guys out there by the old Sloan Airport, if you know where that is.
Hang on just a minute. I'm going through a drive-through here, so I'm going to be placing my order, and I'll be right back with you. KB4CBA.
No monitor.
Who are you monitoring? This is in Gerald TR.
Yeah, KO4LAO.
Always got to be a smart aleck in the crowd, don't there? All right, here's your question of the day. Density altitude. We cannot see, smell, or taste it. However, there's something that must not be ignored. There was an incident in which four people died because they failed to account for density altitude. Three Marine Corps helicopter pilots went up to a high-altitude airport to pick up a passenger with their baggage in on a hot day, took off, and tragically never got out of ground effect. Explain that one to me.
Takeoff and landing data. I'd say that would be failure to do takeoff and landing data. Their performance charts should have told them where they were, and then you bounce that against your weight and balance, and that gives you your performance. But, you can't. The airplane will fly. Same thing with a helicopter. It'll fly as long as it's in the ground effect. But as soon as you get out of ground effect and you make that first turn, that's where you're in trouble.
Now, density altitude. I haven't read this story yet. I'm going to. Can you explain that to where a dummy can understand it?
A sea level pressure is sea level and then at 15 degrees Celsius or 60 degrees Fahrenheit. So as the temperature goes up, the air gets thinner. And so the airplane thinks or will perform as if it were at a higher altitude than what it really is. So if you're in a high desert area, you know, you might be able to take off on a cool morning, with a full fuel load. But as the temperature starts to increase, the air gets thinner. So the airplane's got to work harder, and it doesn't have the same performance capability. So let's say in Albuquerque, New Mexico, 6,000 feet for Double Eagle Airport are there on the west side of town, on a standard day at 15 degrees, whatever the field elevation is, that's what the airplane will perform to. But if it gets really hot, now the airplane takes it to like 9,000 feet.
After you started explaining that, I remembered it. Thank you, Jim. I've been there. We come over the mountains in an S2 D or an E, I don't remember which model, and the heater went out in the back, and I kept hearing them say, Albuquerque Center, so they were the main controller in that area. We was headed for Kansas, but they had control of us, and they wouldn't let us down from, I think it was 11,000 feet. When I got out, I couldn't walk, and I had to fuel the airplane. My feet and legs were so dang cold. But it's kind of like Kadena, Kadena, Kadena. You hear that in your ears, and I still hear it. And the same way with the Albuquerque Center.
I was, but flew a KC-10 into there. I lived in Albuquerque for 3 or 4 years there.
A lot of airspace.
A lot of it's going into the West Coast, into California, places like that, LA Basin, all that stuff. So they have a pretty important function there between Dallas-Fort Worth and then Los Angeles Center there. They're a key link.
Well, I tell you, I get off the radio for just a minute and just goes to pot.
You've been replaced. Yeah, we were headed for Amarillo. Anyways, you guys go ahead, and I don't pay attention to Dave anyways. Discuss your aeroplanes there, Jim. Over to you. N02.
Respect on the air these days.
Respect for his interior.
So, any chance I get to give Tom a hard time, I give him a hard time. But he knows I'm just messing with him, I tell you. What can I say? Well, I got my chicken tenders from Bojangles and headed back to the house.
Had to stop by Wendy's on the way home and get a Frosty or something.
Tell you what, that they got good chili.
Yep, good chili. The only person that makes better chili is my wife.
There to make him all kinds of good stuff.
I talked to him. She's cooking something, fixing something, or he's eating something that she picks. So I'm surprised Tom's not twice as big around as he is. All right, well, I'm in the garage, so I'm going to say 73s, gentlemen. Y'all have a good day. KB4CBA.
Well, I give you a bite of it last night. It was a caramel apple cream cheese crescent ring. Didn't you like the taste of it?
It looked really delicious. But I would have to abstain.
I sent him a picture of a snack Bernice made last night. I just had a piece of it, but I'm presently eating some cottage cheese with mango and white grapes mixed in with it. Now go ahead, Jim.
KO4LAO.
And 0TR. That's one more bad driver off the road, Jim.
I'll tell you about that one, KO4LAO.
Laughing with cottage cheese in my mouth. always kidding. An old butcher that used to work for my dad in our little mom and pop grocery store back in Kansas, he always wanted a stud horse. And a stud horse to him was a Ford Mustang. So I always give him heck about his stud horse there. He did something, made the mufflers louder. And boy, it really sounds cool, though.
Dave, you can hear him shift gears there, and that thing sounds pretty throaty.
That run up against DJW's Nissan, I kind of think that Nissan Dave drives would be a sleeper. Boy, that's a beautiful thing. He just bought it not too long ago. It's a honey.
You in? Good evening, see, I was just in there trying to get a radio check. Just put an antenna up and outside, and call sign is Kilo Bravo Golf Uniform November. Name here is Bill, and I'm in Mills River.
I'd ratchet from my end. You might ask N0TR what he sounds like, what you sound like from him.
just 1 second here. Can you give me your call sign again, please?
He is KB2GUN.
Hey, I like that. Well, you're about 50-50. I'd give you a 5x5 on HF. And so you got some white noise in there, but I think you said, was you on a handy talkie with an outside antenna? Is that correct?
No, I'm on an 857 D, which actually, like I said, just put everything in the air, and so I know what I do now. I go out and do some grounding.
You're in Clyde, North Carolina. Now, I don't know where that's at, but looking at you here on QRZ, I just wonder how somebody that ugly got such a beautiful wife.
Well, it all happens like that. I was told to say, beauty's only skin deep, so, you know, hey.
She is very pretty, Bill. Well, we're talking to Jim there, and I'm Tom, N0TR, and let me look at something right here right quick, and it says that you are 430.7 miles. Wow, that's a pretty good trip, Jim. Go ahead, Jim. Oh, wait, that shows him in Baltimore. I don't think he's there.
There he is. Oh, I'm in Mills River, you're in Greenville, correct?
I know where Mills River is. I used to work up at Hendersonville.
Well, I'm glad I know that I can make the trip on this one, and I got to go back out here and find me some grounding wire, and I found me a grounding spot. I've got to find some wire so I can go and do some grounding.
Well, you were just full quieting then, Bill. You sound real good.
Make sure everything's unplugged before you start doing the ground. But hope you have a good afternoon, and it was nice to talk to you. KB2GUN, KO4LAO clear.
Well, the pleasure's all mine, too. And Jim, he's kind of like me. Bill, my name's Tom Rouse, so it's N0TR. But Jim, he's got a call sign, KB2GUN, and he's William H. Gunn. The only thing he lacks is that second N there on his call sign. 73's Bill. Look forward to talking to you again. This is N0TR. Back to you.
Appreciate it for sure. But y'all have a great evening, and I'm going to say 73's, and I'll get out here for a little bit from KB2GUN. Bill in Mills River, and I'll say 73. Catch you another time.
Plane's supposed to run in.
Plane's supposed to get here?
Yes, sir.
Well, only the good Lord knows for sure. Of course, Bernice felt 2 drops out there this morning. I think it's late tonight, but it's supposed to proceed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They got alerts on that. You know, I brought Bill's call sign up, and it I happened to be sitting in front of the computer and showed him back in Baltimore. But a nice-looking couple. But I'll take a quick gander here in a second. The grass is really needing it, and Bernice is watering the strawberry patch right now.
It's hot in our backyard, and it's we've been watering it pretty heavy. And but we need the rain. I think that would be good. KO4LAO.
Looking at it here, Jim, it says, this is in 0TR. 10 p.m., 40%. 11 p.m., 60. 12, 60. 1, 60. It goes on 64 up till 5 a.m. And at 6 a.m., it goes to 80%. 7 a.m., 90. And at 8 a.m., 70. And then 9 a.m., back up to 80. And that's as much as they show on WYFF4 on this app I got. But it shows Monday 90%, Tuesday 50%, and Wednesday 50%. And then the temperature is going to Dropped down a little bit, but nothing dramatic, like highs of 72, 73 degrees.
So I look forward to having it, as long as it's not too much or too intense at the same time, that'd be great.
Fescue, my neighbor has Bermuda. Don't bother it a bit. But I watered the front lawn the first time this year, a couple of days ago, and I was going to water it this morning. I had the tripod sprinkler set up, but I abstained after I heard it was going to rain tomorrow and the next 2 days. They said from 1 to 2 inches looked pretty predominant around this area, but the possibility of thunderstorms in there too, of course, with this heating that we're getting. But I didn't want to get the backyard all wet, and then we were out there doing some work on some bricks and stuff around the chicken pen, and Bernice was out in the strawberry patch. She come running back there and got me. She had a king snake in there. I was going to go catch him, but he slithered away before I could make it up there.
Those, they're good to have around.
I caught one here in the hallway after we first moved here. This house had been vacant for a year, and that's about 11 years ago. And I didn't know what the indigent animals were around here. And there's like 29 separate species, if I remember rightly, of snakes. And two of them are venomous, the copperhead, which is the most common, and then the timber rattler, which is rather rare. And so I carefully caught it, and I didn't know what it was. I'd never seen one, and they were kind of black, and then they got a yellow band on them, if I remember rightly. So I kept it in a little aquarium and let the kids take it to school, and then I made them bring it back, and we turned it loose in the garden.
Have around. They'll keep the other bad snakes away from you, so I always tell them, don't hurt the king snakes.
Well, you know, I'd forgotten about that. I think that's, well, I know it's correct if you said it, but will they kill a copperhead or something?
I've been told that they'll keep venomous snakes away, but I'm no authority on snakes. I just, that's what I remember.
Snakes, heck, when I was a kid, my brother raised them out in the backyard there. He had some cages, and very few venomous snakes in Kansas, in our area that we were in, southeast Kansas. But the kids, I've killed two copperheads here, I think, and little ones. And but the kids called me one day and they sent a picture of one down there south of 14 and Pelham. There's a creek that goes back through there, and it's got some pretty rocky banks in that. Now, I'm telling you, that's the biggest copperhead I ever did see. And the neighbor, she freaks out if she sees a snake. Her husband has passed away, but he's a retired colonel. And so she comes screaming over to Amy's, and Amy, I've taught them to handle snakes all their lives. And Amy went over and dispatched it. But boy, it was a big one.
If you leave them alone, they're not going to bother you, but sometimes they get in the way, and then that's when trouble happens.
Like Bernice just said, it was in her flower bed, and she gets freaked out if it's a grass snake, but Amy just goes and catches them and moves them. And but there's a lot of kids right there in that area, and it's best that she dispatched it, because it would have been a terrible bite. And see, my grandson, about 2 years ago or so, he got bit in what we think was a cottonmouth water moccasin over Lake Lyman. And I tried to tell him it was, and no, we think it was a copperhead. And Jordan kept describing it, and it was a cottonmouth, even though the ranger said that they'd never had any cottonmouths on Lyman. That don't mean much when they start building these new additions and these snakes all move out of this timber.
In respect, but I understand about kids being around them, because that can really give a kid some tough times.
Jordan's foot, he was about, what, 9 years old? And he got bit, and she immediately ran him to Greer Memorial. And they let him lay there from about 7 o'clock to midnight before the ambulance got there. And they brought the antivenom, which was about, I think, $38,000, $38,000 or $48,000. I think it was $38,000. Because the doctor said it'd be around $50,000 for the antivenom. Four shots.
Well, that's a tough one. So the insurance company cover all that?
It didn't cover all of it, but you know how these companies are nowadays. But she's got good insurance. She's an engineer for General Electric.
Still, for somebody to have to pick up, you wouldn't think that that would cost that much.
I know W4DJW's son dove into a big plethora of cottonmouths, and I'd always, and I knew it was a myth, been told that, like, we had common water snakes, and they were meaner than a junkyard dog up in Kansas. And you couldn't tame them, no matter how long you held them and that, they'd bite you every time. And I'd always been told that they wouldn't strike if they were in the water. And Dave will tell you right quick they did, because I think he got bit multiple times. You'd have to ask Dave about it.
Think about that. They'll bite you under almost anywhere.
It's blue racers. And there's a myth about them that they chase you. People were so freaked out by snakes. I think the myth started when, you know, somebody almost stepped on one and they took out running, and the poor snake, he's not venomous, and he don't want to try to eat something that weighs 200 pounds, you know. But he goes berserk too, and he runs in the same direction. And so the myth starts that the blue racers will chase you.
Hey, to tell me that story, that's an interesting one there. His son's lucky to survive that one.
And you want to tread lightly there. I won't say any more, but Dave lost one of his sons, Jim, but not to the snake bite. I consider him one of my bestest friends down here. He's a great guy and a great pilot. He's flown helicopters on nitromethane, and I think he's flown the electric ones too. And now he's into the drones, but oh my. He's the kind of guy that develops programs for him, you know.
Something I can do, working on the software part is not something that I'm very good at.
Totally amazing. That's all I can say. Totally amazing. And I would imagine Bill was good at it. However, Bill's had some problems with his eyesight here recently, and I think he's kind of getting away from it because he loses sight of them out there. I'd like to start doing a little of it. I'm tinkering with the ideas. Steve asked me to come up there anytime I wanted to, and I might just do that. I have a hard time standing for a long time, though, and it takes that.
Chair and come sit out there anytime you want to go. Just let me know, and we'll go out there to the foothills, and I'll let you fly mine if you want to.
Just have a death wish for your airplane. My friend back in Kansas had several patents on stuff for RC planes, and one day he says, "Tom, I want you to go out with me and fly this plane." And I said, "Well, I've never flown one except in a simulator, you know, a video game." And he said, "That's okay. We don't care if we crash it." And he says, "That's what I'm trying to figure out." Well, I think he was trying to figure out the wing strength or something, because I wasn't flying it very long, and it was pretty high up. And anyways, when you turn around and it comes at you, you know, everything goes inverse. And so I made a fast correction, and one of the wings fell off. And that's one of the things I guess he was trying to prove, and he wasn't upset about it a bit, but I was.
crash them. But the drones, you can put them in a learner mode and get them up to altitude, and they're pretty easy to fly. And then if you're confused about where you are, you just let go of the controls. It'll just stay right there where it is as long as the GPS is working.
Very, very, very cheap one here. I bought one time a couple of years ago, and I fly it out back now and then. You'll do flips and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. And it only got away from me one time and just went over in the neighbor's yard, and I got it back. But, I'd enjoy just coming out and just watching, and Bernice loves to watch them. And they had some pretty good flying clubs back in Kansas. Some of those things had chainsaw motors on them.
Well, there's some RC pilots or builders that are just amazing. Even out at Foothills, we've got some guys that fly the jets, they're flying a kerosene engine, kerosene turbine engine, and they're just amazing. You certainly wouldn't want to crash one of those things because it's pretty much an all-metal jet.
I'd like to see one of those with a radial engine, but those engines are thousands of dollars. It's been years since I looked at them in the RC stuff. But ask Dave about a friend of his that had a B-52 bomber that was truly a turbojet.
The B-52's got eight engines, and it would be interesting to see if he had eight engines just like the real bomber, or he did had one in each nacelle, like maybe just four.
Sure that. It's been a long time, but it was popular online a few years ago, so I'm sure it's still there in a YouTube. You might try to Google it. But Dave knew him personally. If memory serves me right, he was telling me about it several years ago. But there's some of those guys, they have some extreme models, I'll say that. So I wouldn't be surprised if it had all eight of them. But I'm sure it was a B-52, this in 0TR.
Well, yeah, when I was teaching, I used to show my students about a guy who had an RC plane that looked like a lawnmower. In fact, you couldn't hardly tell him a difference. So it was a flying lawnmower. It was pretty interesting to watch him fly.
I wonder how he established the aerodynamics for that.
Was had kind of like an airfoil on it, you know, where you push the mower, but it had I think it had a fan underneath it, so that gave it some lift, and it just needed some forward motion, and I don't remember how it did that, but the guy would do loops with it and all kinds of stuff, and it was a flying lawnmower. It was pretty great. I got to fly on a B-52 one time.
That's something else, and that. The B-52 G's and H's and that, what they've incorporated into those is just unimaginable.
Never been a war horse that was as much value to this country as the B-52 bomber has been. And it's still flying and probably will be for a few more years. But especially the ones that they're re-engineering now. What a great airplane Boeing built.
Trouble they had with the 737s, they had to redesign it when they re-engined it. I just wonder how in the world they'd accomplish that with a B-52, because those engine nacelles, now they, on the 737, they flattened the bottoms of them, but I don't know if there'd be that much room out there on the 52s, and if memory serves me right, they had wheels out there on the end of the wings.
They're little stick-type wheels on the end to keep the wingtips from dragging the ground, because when it's fully loaded and they get to walking, that those wings will flex. And that wheel keeps the wingtip from scraping the ground there, especially on takeoff roll. I was at Norton Air Force Base one time, and we were coming in from landing. We'd just flown a sortie and looked up, and there was a B-52 bomber with its whole wing had collapsed on the left side and was laying on the ground.
That was an expensive repair. This is LTR. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you know, some of these, I think it's like the GE9X and that now, have over 100,000 pounds of thrust per engine. Compare that to a 727 with 10,000 pounds each.
The J57s in them, we have the same engines in the KC-135A model, so they just had four more than we did, but the B-52 could actually carry more fuel than a tanker could.
Well, I remember the first time it flew around the world back in the, I'm going to say the 50s, but that was a big deal. But that rotary bomb bay they got that holds those cruise missiles, it's just, wow, unimaginable. The things they've done and the versatility of that bird.
It's me when they're sitting on the ground and you look at the skin on the side of them, it's all wrinkly. And when it gets airborne and gets its weight on the wings, all those wrinkles go away.
Folks, I never heard that. It is a tremendous aircraft. I know they got grandsons flying what their fathers used to fly. shoot. That and that, the B-47 was in the air a lot when I was a kid, when I'd go to Wichita to visit my aunt and uncle. And they made a ton of those things. But did they ever use Jado on the B-52? I was kind of thinking they might have. I think they did on the 47.
Just on the 47s, but on the B-52s, they didn't. What was it? The B-36 had, push props, and it had jet engines on the outboard engines. I used to fly from McConnell up to Salina, Kansas, and that was a big B-47 base just north of Wichita.
Atomic. Spear, you might say. I lost my train of thought here. I was trying to think. Wasn't the 47? No, the 36. I have a picture of Bernice standing by one of the wheels from a B-36, which was the largest tire ever made, I think, for an aircraft. And they have a B-36 there, as I'm sure you know, at the United States Air Force Museum.
In fact, the movie that Jimmy Stewart starred in called, I think it's called Strategic Air Command, they were flying B-36 bombers, but the maintenance to keep those things going was just horrendous.
Didn't they have pusher props or counter rotate? I can't remember now. And then they also had some turbojets on them, didn't they?
I used to fly. I did some temporary duty at Carswell and flown an airplane down there. I had an in-flight emergency one time and had to go down there and land at Carswell at night. But there's a B-36 bomber in the lake right off the end of the runway there, Lake Worth.
Well, maybe they still dive on that, you reckon?
It's right across the airfield was General Dynamics. And back in the early 80s, that's when they were making the F-16 out of there. And so it was neat to go over to that side of the field and see it. And they used to have some of the old B-58 Hustlers, that had when the guys ejected out of that, they were in a cocoon-type capsule because the airplane went so fast. But that was another maintenance nightmare for the Air Force. And actually, because of the Delta wing on it, if you lost an outboard engine, they would automatically shut down the other outboard engine because the asymmetric thrust on it was something the pilots couldn't control at low speed. So they had to make an automatic engine shutoff for that.
Fun about V1, wasn't it? couldn't have been good at all. Now, I remember that capsule now that you mentioned. That was a supersonic one, that B-58. There was another one I was going to ask you about. I'll think of it in a minute.
At the house here, and I need to get unpacked and head on in, so I'm going to say 73 to you for now, and we'll talk more later. I got to go do my CW homework.
Okie doke. Yeah, I think A3D was another one. One of those, either that or the 47, ejected out the bottom, and they called it a flying coffin.
I do know on the B-52, I think it's the radar nav and the bomb nav, they both eject out of the bottom of the airplane.
Altitude. Jim, it's been a pleasure. Oh, Bernice is bouncing thams around back here. Have a good day, Jim. Nice talking to you. KA4LAO N0CR73.
KO4LAO clear.